the excess of Solomon's partying, working, sex life, and wealth would have been much more satisfying had it just happened and not been so methodically planned out. He's going to deal with that argument in verses 12 through 17. But Solomon turns back to wisdom in 12 through 26 to find meaning and happiness in life. But this too is vanity, because even the wisest person must die and eventually be forgotten. They will leave all their wealth, all their worth, to someone else, and there is no telling if that person will be wise or a fool. Once again, Solomon throws up his hands in despair. His answers his objection by simply explaining that seeing where you're going is better than not seeing, even if it means that you're seeing meaninglessness. So why is wisdom better than folly? And what does Solomon give for wisdom what reason does Solomon give for wisdom being better than folly? It's a trick question. Solomon instinctively knows that wisdom is better, but in his under-the-sun experiment, there's no evidence for it. We see another piece of Solomon's wisdom in Proverbs 17:24. Jesus was the wisest person to ever live. In his teachings, we have much to learn about wisdom and folly. So why is wisdom better? Suffering and difficulty will come, and death is the ultimate end for all of us. But wisdom helps us to endure the storms and to not have lives that fall apart in the wind and rains of life. Most of us probably know someone who ate right, exercised regularly, and was in what we thought was perfect health, who suddenly dropped dead of a heart attack, was attacked by an aggressive terminal cancer, or is killed in a freak accident. No matter what we do, no matter how hard we fight against it, death is coming for all of us. Philip Ryken says, "We are born with the longing for permanence, a deep desire to do something that will endure, or to make something that will last." In other words, leave a legacy. Yet the under-the-sun reality is that we will spend our whole lives working to gain something that we cannot keep. Paul tells us to set our minds on things that are above, not on things that are on earth. One of the hallmarks of Antichrist is a focus on the world instead of a focus on eternity. This doesn't mean that we are to disregard the world around us. We are commanded to care for the world and for those in it. However, this will only be done effectively by those who have minds focused on eternity. There's no guarantee that we will be able to enjoy what we have. It's the continual drive for more and the inability to be satisfied with what we have that robs us. Solomon is insisting that unless we are able to look beyond the sun, we will never find meaning under the sun. When we pursue the latter, we get neither, but if we look to eternity, we get the enjoyment of the temporary as well. Have you ever really, really wanted something, and once you got it, it didn't make you as happy as you thought it would? Things will never make us happy. It's a hard lesson to learn. So what is one to do? Live and enjoy today. God intends for us to work, enjoy the fruit that God has granted to us, enjoy God's blessing while in this brief life. Stop trying to accumulate things. They can never bring you true happiness. Enjoy the simple blessings, the small things, and you will find your cup overflowing. Any questions or comments? Who would like to read our text this morning? We'll split it up. Who would like to read 12 through 17?
I will.
Okay, David.
"And I turned my thoughts to consider wisdom, and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise have eyes in their heads, while the fool walks into the darkness. But I came to realize that the same fate overtakes them both. Then I said to myself, the fate of the fool will overtake me also. What then do I gain by being wise? I said to myself, this too is meaningless. For the wise, like the fool, will not be long remembered. The days have already come when both have been forgotten. Like the fool, the wise must die too."
Seven.
So, did you say?
17.
"So I hated life because the work that is done under the sun was grievous to me. All of it is meaningless, a chasing after the wind.
Okay, who'd like to finish us up? 18 through 26. Kevin?
I hated all the things I had told for my new son, because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether that person will be wise or foolish. Yet they will have control over all the fruit of my toil into which I have poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all my toilsome labor under the sun. A person may labor with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, and then they must leave all they own to another who has not toiled for it. This too is meaningless and a great misfortune. What do people get for all the toil and anxious striving with which they labor under the sun? All their days their work is grief and pain. Even at night their minds do not rest. This too is meaningless. A person can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in their own toil. This too, I see, is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the person who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing up wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This, too, is meaningless, chasing after the wind.
Okay, thanks, Kevin. So what is Solomon referencing when he says in verses 17, 18, 19, 20, and 22 that something is under the sun? What is he referring to?
Everything on earth?
Correct, yeah. In this world, everything on this world, everything in this life. So what conclusion, oh, by the way, this, you notice it's sun, S-U-N, not sun, S-O-N. That's how we know it's this earth. So what conclusion was drawn about the value of wisdom and folly in verses 12 and 13? To what, Valeria?
They're both meaningless.
Wisdom is better than what? Folly. Wisdom is better than folly. And he also goes on and says that light is better than darkness, or excels in darkness. So what does it mean for wisdom to be better than folly? What does that mean?
Wisdom gives you the knowledge of what's important.
Okay.
Folly is just that which is temporary that you think is going to satisfy you.
Okay.
It doesn't.
Okay. Anybody else? Yeah, you're right, Vaughn. That's pretty well it. As we've talked about in other classes, you know, that what about wisdom? Wisdom is the what? How do we define wisdom, Jim?
Application of knowledge
is what I was looking for. I guess that's one way of putting it. Yeah, you should, shouldn't he? This David?
No.
Or that David?
Okay. Joker,
David.
I don't know how jokes work.
I like the way the Amplified Bible has it. Anyone have an Amplified version? I don't know what's on your phone, because you got about 30 of them. Amplified puts it this way for verse 12, 13. Then I saw that even secular wisdom that brings sorrow is better than the pleasures of folly and self-indulgence. So I thought that kind of explained it a little bit better. So what is the common fate of the wise and the foolish? Valeria spoke about it a minute ago.
Both meet the same end.
Yeah, the end is the same. Death comes to both the wise and foolish. And then what happens? They're both forgotten. And that's number four. What When this common fate is considered, what frustrated Solomon about seeking wisdom, that both wise men and the foolish man will die and be forgotten. Shane, do you have your hand up?
Yes, but someone else said
it. Okay. Any comments about the wise and foolish dying and then being forgotten?
You know, it's really a perspective thing. You know, someone might take a lot of pride, I am so wise. Well, you're going to end the same way as the fool over there.
Yeah.
It's really a perspective thing. It's good to be wise, but it's not a point of self-indulging pride.
Yeah.
What is it? Okay. She normally has the word that I need.
She said something, but I didn't hear what she said. Yeah, good point. Shane?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it's a fundamental sense of humility here, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a realization that you can be wise and do all these great things that he talks about, but at the end of the day, we all face death because we live in a material world. Our material bodies will suffer death, will go away, you know, and the world will move on.
Yeah.
Society will move on, civilization will move on, but we'll be dead.
Exactly.
And that's just the fact. And so we can think highly of ourselves because we're wise, but that in and of itself is foolish because that's lacking the humility to realize that we face the same fate.
The end result is the same. So, anybody else? So what did this reflection lead him to do? Of course, he is talking about Solomon. What did this reflection lead Solomon to do? Verse 17. Do what? You got to speak up, Valeria. She said hate life, which is correct. So why would all this lead Solomon to hate life? I thought Solomon had it pretty well under control. He was the wisest man to ever live, other than Jesus, of course. He had all this wealth, these mansions, these palaces we talked about last week. Whether it's 300 wives, 600 concubines was wise, that's debatable, but he had those. I mean, he had... And I think we talked about last week, everything he wanted, he had or went out and got. So why did he hate life?
No challenges.
That's one, yeah.
Because he saw it didn't satisfy.
He thought what?
He saw that it didn't satisfy. All that he had didn't satisfy.
Yeah, he thought if he had all this stuff, he would be happy. Everything would, his life would be fulfilled. But then like we just said, the end result is he's going to die just like everybody else. And at some point, he'll be forgotten.
But he hasn't been.
He hasn't been. Not yet. But like Gary talked about this morning, if people can forget God and Christ, at some point, they're going to forget Solomon too, if they haven't already. Was that a good
crossover? Solomon is enshrined.
Yes.
Jim's not, I'm not,
yeah.
You're not.
Yeah.
So, you know, Solomon's going to keep coming up time after time, as long as life exists on the earth. But you know, when I die, you know, I may be removed for a while, but eventually, I'm history.
What are tombstones for? Why do we put a tombstone at someone's grave?
Keep remembering them.
So we remember them, right. Shane?
Well, I was going to argue that it's true we have the words of Solomon.
Yeah.
But Solomon is forgotten. I mean, no one remembers what Solomon's smile looks like. Mm. No one remembers what it's like for Solomon to give you a hug.
Yeah.
So to me, Solomon, the human being, is forgotten.
Yeah.
Now, we have the words of Solomon.
Yeah.
We have a knowledge base that he accumulated.
Right.
But nobody remembers what it was like to walk down the road with Solomon.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so in that sense, he is forgotten.
Yeah, you're right. So.
I was growing up playing there. I remember this quote from the Reader's Digest. It says, "The pursuit of the goal is more enjoyable than the actual realization."
Yeah.
And you know, we can look at various things in our life, and you know, I wanted this, I wanted this, I wanted this.
Yeah.
I strove for it.
Yeah.
It was great, but when I got it, it was replaced by something
else. Yeah, really. And you see that in little kids on Christmas morning, don't you? Yeah.
Wasn't me.
But yeah, I mean, even you know, we have people who are, you know, we've erected statues for, and some of them's come down, but that's beside the point. But I mean, that's the reason we erect statues, is so we quote remember people for a while. Tombstones, that's why we put tombstones up, so we'll remember people for a while. But at some point, you go into graveyards that have been there, you know, 200 years. What's happened to those gravestones? They've fallen over, deteriorated. You know, you can't even read them anymore. So anyway, any other comments? So what else caused Solomon to hate all his accomplishments in verse 18? Do what?
Someone else is going to get to enjoy him.
Exactly. Yeah. He had to leave all the fruit of his labor to the man who came after him. And what, and number 7, why did this trouble Solomon? I mean, we should be proud that we're able to leave something to the next generation or whoever's coming up behind us, shouldn't we?
Because they won't appreciate it. I mean,
that happens a lot of times, doesn't it?
It's like, I have 2 sons and all the different things, and they're not going to want any of them, you know? Like, we'll end up in one of those storage sheds if
yeah.
you're on that TV show.
Storage wars.
Yeah. Our cars, so they don't
yeah.
China anymore. So,
yeah.
And it's like, oh, well.
Yeah.
And to bear that out, we go to the state sales every now and then.
Exactly.
And if the people that are running the sales, they said, you know, the kids don't want this stuff.
Yeah.
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 I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's true.
Yeah. I've mentioned several times that Susan and her sister are executors with their aunt who did not have children. So, and some of it's going to be divided amongst 10 cousins, you know. So most of these cousins probably don't even remember this aunt. You know, she's just an aunt that lived in Alabama. So instead of a rich uncle, it's a rich aunt. But they're talking about estate sales. They already talked, I mean, from day one, they're talking about estate sales. So, I mean, they're going through picking up some things, but yeah. Going back to what Shane was talking about, no one actually remembers or knows what Solomon looked like, his speech impediment, whatever. Susan made the comment last night, we was watching a movie, and a lot of men had beards. You know, beards are a big thing now with men. I don't know about women, but with men it is. She said, "Why is everybody wearing beards these days?" I said, "I don't know." And she said something came up about biblical people. You know, usually when we look at a picture or something of someone from the Bible, the men have beards, except for Jesus. Have you ever seen the picture of Jesus wearing a beard? I have not. Yes. I couldn't remember one. Have you?
Some art. I have.
Have you?
Medieval or Byzantine art. There is.
Okay. Usually, Jesus is not wearing a beard. Susan said, "Well, Moses wore a beard." And I said, "How do you know?" Because she saw the movie. And Charles, somebody in the movie didn't wear a beard. So.
The reason for the beard, the unshaven look,
yeah,
is about 5 years ago there was a survey done, and women found men with facial hair more appealing.
Is that right?
And that supposedly is a genesis of this, of late.
I don't know.
I'm going to see you.
Well, some of us can grow hair up here. Some of us have to wear it down here. I won't call any names. Number eight. What did he conclude was the result of one's labor, striving, and toil for things under the sun? Why did Solomon conclude that about one's labor, striving, and toil for things under the sun? Grief, one of them.
Pain.
Sorrowful days or late days of labor. How about restless nights? That part of it. And it all led to what? What was the final conclusion? Meaningless or vanity. Depends on your translation. Can a person place too much value on his or her work? Explain your answer. How do we do that? How do we put too much value on our work?
A lot of times you work hard for it, right? You
yeah.
A lot of value in your work because you worked a lot to get it.
Okay. Sometimes we work too much, though, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, don't we have workaholics?
If you work too much, that means you're leaving something out because you're not giving God the time that is needed.
Yeah.
You can have that relationship with God because, you know, even your family, you say you're working to help your family, but if you don't develop that relationship to make that a healthy family, that's a problem.
Yeah. Your priority's in the wrong place.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A lot of times, too, you when you work, you're in an environment where people value what you're doing. And so you can create this environment where all of our deadlines, all of our projects, all these things, they're very important.
Yeah.
You know, people want them done, and you know, parts can go out the door, whatever it is.
Right.
And I'm always drawn back to, this is a long time ago, but you know, I used to work in automotive industry, and we had to have so many parts out the door every
yeah.
day, right? And it, you know, there was this pressure, and we, you know, and one night we were at there was a group of us at a friend's house. We all worked at the same factory, and we were there with our wives, and of course the men were sitting there talking about, you know, oh, God, this is going on. And one of the wives said, "Hey, all you guys do is make parts for cars. And that's all you do. It's not like you're doing anything important. It's not like you're saving the world. It's not like you're curing cancer. So just relax." Right? In our minds, we thought we were doing really important work.
Yeah.
And she was like, "You guys don't do anything of any value at all. Right? You're making car parts." You know. And so I think that we can really get sucked into that work.
Yeah.
Start to really believe this is really important work that I'm doing. It's got to get done today.
Yeah.
It's got to happen.
Yeah.
And lose our perspective.
Yeah, you're right.
Part of that comes from society.
Yeah.
Society places value.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, to afford that big house and the new car and all that, we have to bring in the income. Anybody else? Wayne?
I think part of the reason we work hard is that we want to be a responsible person. That we don't want to be considered irresponsible and not pay our bills and that sort of thing. And so we have jobs that we try to work hard and excel in because we don't want to get fired. We don't want to lose that job. So part of why we do that, I think, is just out of responsibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or to stay out of jail.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're told, and the Bible tells us, you know, we have to work. So we have to provide for our family. Jim, were you going to say something?
No, you said something a moment ago, and I saw where you could hear.
Yeah. Oh, you're talking about someone else? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Susan's aunt's got a car for sale. Anybody needs Yes, ma'am.
I know of a family that over the years, every time they sold a house, part of that profit that they made on the house, they would send to a missionary.
Mm.
They would send to a small church that they knew needed a new air conditioning unit.
Yeah.
They would send to Bible camps. And there's not very many of my brothers and sisters that I know of who would dedicate every time they sold something large.
Yeah.
That they're not just going to take that money.
Right. Usually we want to roll it into something bigger.
They've done that for over 50 years.
Wow.
And they did not make a lot of money. And I was just very impressed. And they still do it.
Yeah. Yeah, we love to hear stories like that. Makes us feel bad, but we like to hear them.
I know.
Oh, where are we? Number 10. What did he say was the best man could achieve? What did Solomon say was the best the man could achieve? Verse 24. Yeah.
Satisfaction from toil.
Correct. I mean, yeah, there's one thing like Wayne was talking about, to go out and work, bring an income so you can provide for your family. But it's another thing to do like Shane was talking about, you know, to go out and work all the time and think you're making a big contribution to society, when sometimes it's not as big as you may think it is. But you think you've got to keep working and working. So, any comments? Yes, ma'am.
I just kind of have a question. I mean, it seems like Solomon, he focuses on accomplishments and material things and pleasures and all this.
Right.
What about, would you say to the unbeliever who finds meaning in family and their children or their friendships? That seems to give them reason to live. It doesn't seem like vanity.
Yeah, yeah. This is what Solomon said it was.
Yeah, I just wonder why people are like, you know, it's like, you know, some people think that they're perfectly fine without God because
yeah.
their kids are their life.
Yeah.
Their family or their friends, you know.
And there are a lot of good people out there, like Gary was talking about this morning. There are a lot of good people walking around, but they don't believe this religious stuff.
Yeah, but they don't think their lives are in vain.
Yeah.
They have
yeah.
Yeah. I kind of just wondered about that. I don't know. I don't know if I can address
that. I don't know. Someone have an answer for her? Kevin?
I think it's a great question.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously a lot of us find a lot of meaning in our family and parents with their children.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No. I think we're encouraged to love our family. That being said, at some point in time, they're going to pass away. And then if you focused all your satisfaction on a particular person, the relative, and what then after that?
Yeah.
Are you? And some people are totally distraught after that. They have
yeah.
purpose.
So yeah.
I think it gets back, in my opinion, it gets back to finding your purpose in God.
Yeah.
That was
really good.
Well, and I just tell a short story. One of the things, I mean, we should value our family, and we should find fulfillment within our family to a certain degree. But many, many years ago, I knew a family from church. You know, they went to church. And the wife and the kids were in the car, and that car got struck by another car, and they all died, and left just the husband, right? And without the wife and the kids, he saw no purpose in life. And all of a sudden, his life had no meaning. Even though they went to church every Sunday, he didn't really have a deep spiritual connection with God. And once the wife and the kids were taken away from him, he felt, from that point on, he never went back to church. We never saw him anymore because that was his meaning. That was his life. And when they were gone, all of a sudden, he was wandering around in the world alone with no meaning because he didn't have that spiritual connection to God that it was revealed. I mean, we would have all said he did until this happened. And so I would say, we do find fulfillment and value in our family, in our children, in our wives, in our parents, but there's a limit there, because if that is it, all those things can easily be taken away in a second, and then what do you have? And to me, that's really the end-all, be-all of where Solomon is going here. All of these things, these physical things we can touch in this world, all of these things can be taken away from us. They can be gone in an instant. And so, what's the meaning of that? There is none.
It's true, man. Everything is temporary, and only God is eternal.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think in the Old Testament, they really didn't, I don't know if they believed in life after death, or, you know, so I don't know. I mean, his whole point in this is that there's no value in anything under the sun, except, you know,
yeah.
I don't know, but yeah, I see that. I mean, every person will come to that point of realization that life is temporary,
yeah.
It doesn't last, and then where do you, what gives you meaning then?
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and if it's strictly with things under the sun or what's on earth, then it is vanity because it will go away.
Yeah.
So, Vaughn, and then I'll come to Jared.
Yeah, Shane made an excellent point. I'm glad that you mentioned it. And just my add to that was just that Solomon had a conclusion in writing this book. And he's setting up everything for that conclusion.
Yeah.
He reveals that at the end. I won't be a spoiler.
That's all right.
I think in answer to that question, I think he was just leading up to that end.
Yeah.
And he's saying, look, all the stuff that you're placing all your heart on, all your hard work and everything, like Shane said, even the things that are good in this life, they're still in this life.
Yeah.
They're still going to be temporary.
Yeah.
And if that's the basis of your life, you're bound to be disappointed.
Exactly. Yeah. Jared?
Yeah, same story.
Okay. So look at verse 20.
Some people are getting depressed because of that, because of suicide, because they lost something, and so as a result, someone else is
losing. Yeah.
There's always a good reason how they do
it. Yeah. So look at verse 25. Is verse 25 saying that we cannot have enjoyment without God?
No. Yes.
All right, I've got a no and I've got a yes.
Wait. Oh, without God, sorry.
Yeah.
There's a double negative there.
There is.
Okay.
Is it saying, is verse 25 saying that we cannot have enjoyment without God?
Yes.
Are you changing your vote to yes now?
I'm changing my vote.
I think that's really the whole Ecclesiastes message.
Okay.
Yeah. That without God, everything is meaningless.
Exactly.
I think probably the reason that maybe a lot of people find pain in losing different things, whatever they are, whether they're material or family or whatever, is sometimes we put all those things before God, and maybe God says, takes something, he allows something to be taken away, or he takes it away because we put more importance on that than we have on our relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. Good point. Anybody else? Verse 26. Who is capable of achieving this enjoyment? Who is or who was capable of enjoying this enjoyment? What Wayne just said. The one who was good in God's sight. Then as one translation says, what did God give this person who was good in his sight? Verse 26. What did God give this person? Verse 26.
Wisdom.
Wisdom, knowledge, and what? Happiness or joy? Absolutely. And what task is the sinner given? Verse 26.
Gathering and storing up.
Gathering
things so that they can be passed down to people that God wants to give them to.
Well, you're jumping the gun on me, Vaughn.
That's what you asked.
I know. The task was of gathering and collecting, and then for what purpose or why?
To hand it over.
So he may give to him who was good before God. Is that what you said?
Not so.
Who's the guy that was cursed to roll the mountain up the rock up the mountain all his life? Wasn't Euripides, was it?
I don't know. There's our book reader. She would know.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
I can't remember. It sounds like that kind of thing, though.
Oh, yeah. So any questions on our questions? Anything we did not cover going through the questions? So when the preacher looked back on all he had done, he found it to be vanity and grasping for the wind. Comparing the value of wisdom and folly, he found that wisdom surpassed folly. He also observed that death came to both the wise and the foolish, and any accumulated wealth provided little relief. He concludes it is best to enjoy what good there is in one's labor. He realized, however, that the ability to truly enjoy life is a gift from God. He saw that God gives wisdom, knowledge, and joy to a man who is good in his sight. Death will ultimately come to all, and there is nothing that we've gained in this life will matter and come with us. What's the joke? You won't ever see a hearse with a U-Haul trailer behind it. Mm-hmm. So with this perspective in mind, Solomon calls us to enjoy life deeply, but not in order to gain ultimate satisfaction. It's only when we can see life through this perspective that we are able to enjoy it for what it is, because we then recognize what it can never be. Only in the light of our death can we truly experience life. Hans Urs von Balthasar, whatever his name is, had this to say: what you are is God's gift to you. What you become is your gift to God. Any questions, comments, or otherwise? Shane?
So I think it's interesting to contrast what Solomon has to say. Because, okay, we look at Solomon. He's this great king, accumulates this kingdom, wealth, all this stuff. I think it's interesting to contrast what Solomon has to say here versus what would have been the comparable thought process of the day in Egypt of a pharaoh. Because we go today, you know, to see the tombs of the great pharaohs.
Right. Yeah.
What's in the tombs? All their stuff.
Yeah.
Because they wanted to be buried with all their stuff so that they could have all their stuff.
Yeah.
So their tombs are filled with gold and all this vast wealth and all these things they accumulated. Their tomb is filled with that so that in death they can have all this stuff.
Yeah.
And we know the truth. I mean, their stuff has just either been stolen over the years by
grave robbers, yeah.
Or they're in a museum for us to go look.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we see the contrast between the kings of Egypt versus the king of Israel.
Yeah.
In his realization that, hey, I'm not taking this stuff with me. It's going to someone else now.
Yeah.
And all of this is meaningless.
Yeah.
Versus the Egyptians who seemed to believe that they were going to take it into the afterlife with them.
Exactly.
And we see the difference between what I call the correct view,
yeah,
Solomon,
yeah,
versus the incorrect view, that of the Egyptians.
Right. Good point. Very good point.
And then I think it was George Strait said, you didn't bring nothing with you, can't take nothing back, and never saw a hearse.
Next week we'll begin Chapter 3, we'll look at verses 1 through 15. I'm going to give you just a minute.
Right.
I'm going to give you time. 1 through 15, I normally don't assign homework, but next week I'm assigning homework. Memorize verses 1 through 8. And if you use the King James Version, it will come to you real easy. So verses 1 through 8. But we're going to look at 1 through 15. Also, one other thing, because of the luncheon next week, we'll be in the auditorium. But we'll have announcements about that. Beginning Wednesday night, Vaughn begins his class. So Vaughn, you want to give us a commercial?
I,
I don't know. Are you doing Ecclesiastes throughout the summer?
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't have anything to do with the planning of that. I don't know if Linda, he knows what we're doing coming up this summer.
But I know the book you're using, unless you've changed it.
I'm really thrilled that he's doing this summer for Sunday, because it's a great contrast to what we're talking about in the Wednesday night series, starting this Wednesday night. It's based on a book by John Bevere called Driven by Eternity. And it kind of goes right along with what Lynn's talking about with this on Sunday morning. It's about how to make your life count for what's going to actually be eternal. And so it's a real good compliment there, and I hope to see everybody that's in this room there on Wednesday night, except I'm going to give Gary a hall pass, he and Ron, because they're doing a series at Niceville, right, on Wednesday night.
Yeah, just this one.
Oh, just the one? Okay. Yeah.
It's rotating.
I'll give him a hall pass for just this one. And if you guys want to go see him, I'll give you a hall pass for that, too. But you don't have an excuse for following Wednesday nights. So please come. I want to encourage everybody to come. And